The news this week that the GM plant in Janesville will be closed in about a year and a half because of low demand for trucks and SUVs stunned the community and angered Governor Jim Doyle.
There wasn't even really, I'm sorry. I mean, it was just, this is the way the world works, and this is what we're going to do, and we're going to some other lines, and too bad for all of you people. So, you know, my reaction, like many, I think, was to just say, I'm really mad.
I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, June the 5th. And we will talk this hour about how the state and the community are dealing with the news that the GM plant, one of Janesville's largest employers since the plant opened way back in 1919, will close by 2010. We will start with Wisconsin Public Radio reporter Gil Halstead, who covered the announcement. Good morning, Gil. Good morning, Gil.
Good morning, Joy.
So GM wants to close the Janesville plant and three others because trucks and SUVs aren't selling well these days?
Right, and of course they're not selling well because of the price of gas. And the company says that they sort of saw this coming but didn't really do anything about it until right now. And they just can't afford to keep producing cars that worth trucks and SUVs that were selling very well when they stopped selling.
Yeah. So how many jobs are involved here in Janesville?
Well, we're talking about 2,600 there, and then I've seen analyses of the ripple, or as Governor Doyle called it, the wave effect that would possibly double that in terms of the companies that provide parts to the GM plant there that are also in the area, and of course related businesses that are used and patronized by workers there. If the workers leave or have less earning power anyway, those businesses are going to be hurt as well.
Yeah. So how first are the workers reacting to this?
Well, I'd say they're pretty angry. Mm-hmm. They tried to be polite, well, at least some of them did. The union leaders weren't pulling any punches in condemning GM for making this decision. One of the workers said he was a tad bit upset when he heard it and was beginning to look at his options for trying to perhaps transfer to another GM plant somewhere or having to sort of retool himself and find other work.
Yeah. I understand that some of the GM workers are also upset with those of us who don't drive GM cars or American-made cars.
Well, a comment to that effect was made, actually targeting a reporter at the news conference a couple of days ago. For both the issue of buying foreign cars and of GM actually making cars in foreign countries like Mexico, although they do plan to close the plant in Mexico. There was a lot of talk from union leaders at the news conference that GM doesn't really care about American workers. They care about making money where they can make the most of it, and they can do that in places like Mexico where the labor costs are lower.
Yeah. So what options are available for the Governor Doyle or other state officials in dealing with this blow?
Well, there is talk now by both the governor and the union, and also, of course, from our congressional delegate, Senator Cole and Feingold, as well as Representative Ryan, have written a letter to GM asking for a meeting to sit down with GM and talk about keeping the plant open and finding a new product line, I guess a more fuel-efficient car that would sell, to move into the plant there and keep it open and keep those workers employed.
Yeah.
But the chances of that, from what even the union leaders and Governor Doyle are acknowledging, that it's rather slim, they're just making the commitment to really try to do that. At the same time, there's lots of preparations sort of waiting to happen to help these workers find other work once the plant does close in 2010.
Yeah. There's also in the news this morning, other workers at other GM plants are not taking this kindly. There's a blockades, I guess, in Ohio, and I just was handed a wire story that a blockade forced the GM of Canada office to close down.
I hadn't heard about the Ohio one. Yeah, I saw the Canadian one. They're not taking it sitting down there. It's the one in Ontario, in Oshawa, which is just east of Toronto on Lake Ontario. They started a blockade within hours after the announcement. They actually apparently have let some of the blockade of the GM head office there, not of the plant, trying to keep the workers out. They apparently have let some in, but they are making the same demands that are being made here in Janesville, that the company find ways to keep it open.
Yeah. Well, Gil, anything else that we should be looking for or listening for in the days to come?
Well, I think we're going to start to hear, I'm not sure how soon, about buyout offers for the workers that are there, as has happened, as just happened recently in April, when they laid off 750 workers in Janesville and offered many of them buyouts, as they have at other plants. And eventually we're going to see, probably not that quickly, but over the next year, a lot about the preparations being made to help these workers once the plant closes. It really reminds me of one of the first stories I covered when I started working in radio in Kenosha, when I worked at WGTD there, when the Chrysler plant shut down. And there was lots of very emotional meetings held with workers and GM officials and union officials about how to handle this.
Yeah.
And it's been said that, you know, Kenosha did eventually bounce back, and it's being pointed to as an example of how the same thing, the same process will hopefully be possible in Janesville.
Well, we'll talk more about Janesville bouncing back with our next guest. Gil Halstead, thanks a lot for being with us.
My pleasure.
Gil Halstead, Madison-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll talk with the editor of the Janesville Gazette coming up after we check the weather. And we will welcome your thoughts and questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. What do you think about this announcement from GM this week that it will close the Janesville plant? Do you blame the company for poor planning? Or not? What do you want to see the state do to help the workers and the region recover? This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Well, we're also going to really make sure that these people that have been the pride of Wisconsin, we're going to make sure that that they land on their feet.
That's Governor Doyle vowing to help Janesville and the GM workers who learned this week that they will be losing their jobs when the plant some have worked at all of their lives closes its doors by 2010. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 19 minutes past 6 o'clock, and we will welcome in now another guest to talk about how this news is affecting the region and how the community is coping. Scott Angus is the editor of the Janesville Gazette. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
So this was a big blow to the community.
Yes, the blow that all of us had feared for many, many years.
Yeah, but so it didn't come as a complete surprise, but still it was a shocker, wasn't it?
Well, you know, it was. It was not a complete surprise. I think people who pay attention to the auto industry and Janesville's role in it certainly were suspecting that maybe the days were numbered here, and some other decisions by GM of late certainly seem to indicate that. But even so, when the news like this comes, it's definitely a blow, just because it's been such an important part of this community for so many years.
Yeah, you had a recent column. It's hard to believe that Janesville won't be an auto town after 2010. It's been there. It's been a part of the history, culture, a very long time.
Since about 1920, actually, in various ways, but always a strong employer, the strongest employer through most of that time, right up until recently. And these are good jobs. These are people who make good money and spend that money in the community. So it has definitely been a foundation for this economy for decades.
Yeah, generations of families have worked there. Some of the workers who are losing their jobs have been there all their lives.
them and their fathers and their grandfathers in many cases. And as I mentioned in the column, in some cases it was almost a birthright to get an opportunity to work at General Motors for people in Janesville. That was decades ago, in the 50s and 60s in particular, with the heyday of the auto industry and auto production in Janesville. They were looking for workers, and people, they literally recruited, and it wasn't very hard to get a job down there, and they were good jobs, as we said.
Yeah, I think I heard around an average of about $27 an hour or so.
I think they finished up at about $27, $28 bucks an hour, yep.
Yeah. So that's going to be not going to be easy to replace those jobs.
Well, you don't replace them in this economy, certainly. I mean, they're manufacturing jobs. These are good workers. There's no question about that. Janesville's always had a strong labor force. The Janesville GM plant has always done extremely well in productivity and quality studies. So they're good workers, but unfortunately, a lot of what they did doesn't transfer terribly well to other work. It's manufacturing work, and we all know what's going on with manufacturing jobs in the state and elsewhere. So that's not a good indicator. And to be honest with you, Janesville has some manufacturing jobs. It clearly doesn't have enough to replace those at this point. So that will be a challenge, no question.
I read an article that said plastics is a hope that's manufacturing of plastics
in Janesville.
Yeah.
Well, we have several firms that do some plastic manufacturing and thermoforming. Prent is a locally grown company that's a very good company, and they have a related company that grew out of them. And again, a very strong company with hundreds of employees, but not growing to the extent that they can, take on thousands of workers. And we certainly hope for the best for Prent. And again, it's been a great company.
Yeah.
Prent and GoEx are the two companies, and I think they have a bright future. But maybe some of these people would find work there, but it's going to be a transition.
Yeah. Well, we heard Gil Halstead, our reporter, saying that Paul Ryan, Russ Feingold, Herb Kohl, writing letters to GM, trying to lobby GM to bring another production line to Janesville.
Right.
Are you hopeful for that?
To be perfectly honest, no, I'm not. Certainly, we appreciate their efforts, and if that should happen, we'd all be very happy. But I can't imagine there was a politician ever in a state where GM or any other automaker shut down a plant that didn't make pleas to the company to change its mind. I mean, that's just the way it works. But General Motors has to make some tough decisions. They have been criticized roundly for not making the right decisions and the tough decisions through the years. And as a result, they're in trouble. And now they're making these tough decisions, and I seriously don't think they will reconsider. A lot goes into these decisions, and I think once they make them, they've got to move on. So God bless everybody who's trying, and we sure hope it happens, but I'm not holding out hope.
Yeah. Well, we heard Governor Doyle also mad at GM over the way the announcement was made, and also for not planning better, because he said everybody saw this coming, gas prices and maybe lower demand for the big gas users.
Sure. Well, I think that's clearly got to be part of the equation here, is that General Motors did not think ahead, and at least to the degree they should have. But that's easy to say now. I mean, you have to look back. Janesville's been making these SUVs for quite some time, and they have been tremendous for the early part of this decade. They sold like crazy. They couldn't keep up with the demand, and these are high profit vehicles. These make more money for General Motors when they sell than any product they make. So, in some ways, they rode it as long as they could, and you hate to pull out too early, but by the same token, as gas prices started going up and other indications suggested that they wouldn't continue to be the big seller, certainly a lot of people are suggesting that General Motors should have been on top of this quite a bit sooner. But again, that's hindsight, and these have been fabulous sellers for a long time, and again, high quality and high profit vehicles. So, the time has pretty much run out on them, at least in terms of the big sales, and it's unfortunate GM didn't get on it sooner, but that's the way it works.
Yeah. We have a couple of callers for you. Carl
sure.
In Superior, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, yeah, thanks for taking my call. It's a real tragedy that this plant is closing, and it's, that's affecting thousands of workers' lives. But I think there are ways that it could be kept open. One important idea would be to retrofit it to make parts for mass transit systems, like train cars. And if Doyle's really mad about it, one thing he could do maybe is, scrap this dumb $2 billion widening of I-94 and instead increase the mass transit in Wisconsin so that they'd have a guaranteed buyer for those systems.
Mm-hmm.
If a company doesn't want to open it up, they can at least, help the workers buy out the factory with some loans or have the state do it. I mean, there are ways that it can be done.
Yeah,
I
think it's an interesting point. Could that be in the future that plant could maybe do something like involved with mass transit, Scott Angus?
Well, I think anything's possible. Certainly, it's a huge manufacturing plant, and I think they will look at all options. We're doing a story right now, and actually, I'll note a competitor, the Journal Sentinel, had it today. That, it's going to be tough. That plant is 3 million square feet that was kind of cobbled together over time. If you look at most manufacturing facilities, the ones that have been built most recently, they're built for a single purpose, and they're built in a way that really allows them to be efficient as manufacturing space. This plant, was built piece by piece since 1920 in dozens of different additions. So it's the oldest plant in Janesville and in General Motors stable, and also kind of a cobbled together plant over the years, which makes it, I think, more difficult to transfer it to other usable manufacturing space. Not that it can't be done. We're going to have to try and find something to do with it if it doesn't, if GM does not come back in some way, because again, it's 3 million square feet, and that's a lot of property, and it's something that a key point in the city. We certainly don't want to let it sit there and become an eyesore over time. So hopefully something can be done. I think mass transit's an interesting idea. I'm not sure how soon that could work and how big that could become. When you think about 3 million square feet, that is huge.
That is huge.
Most manufacturing uses would take, a fraction of that these days.
Next we go to Ed in West Allis. Hi, Ed.
This is just nothing more than corporate warfare and economic warfare and union busting against American workers that has been going on in this country since the middle of the 1960s. Yeah. And because we have a moorbound labor union and labor movement in this country that hasn't challenged the Hondas and the Toyotas and the Nissans, the non-union and union-busting companies that now dominate car production in the United States, we find ourselves in this situation.
Yeah, Ed's mad. Are the workers at the GM plant in Janesville, Scott Angus, as upset with this?
Well, certainly there's a lot of that frustration and certainly a good amount of that same sentiment. There is a flip side, though, and again, I'm not going to take positions here, but I will present the other side, and that's that, these people were making $28 an hour and getting tremendously generous benefits to produce these cars. In many cases, they were being paid not to work. If you get laid off at General Motors, you continue to earn pretty much your full salary. A lot of people would argue that pushed up the cost of these vehicles to the point, or helped to push up the cost of these vehicles to the point where the average citizen couldn't afford them. And in some ways, that also contributed to GM's inability to compete. So, again, it's an argument that can be made both ways, and I don't think there's a simple answer.
Yeah, and we'll leave it there. Thank you so much, Scott Angus, for being with us. Scott Angus is the editor of the Janesville Gazette, talking with us about how the community is coping with the news that GM will be closing the Janesville GM plant by 2010. We'll get another perspective on this story coming up after we check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll be welcoming in Frank Emspach, who is an emeritus professor at the University of Wisconsin Extension School for Workers, talk about what this means for labor and workers. It's 7:36 on this Thursday, June the 5th. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We're talking about the news this week that GM will close its Janesville plant in about a year and a half due to low demand for the SUVs and trucks made there. Brad Dutcher is one of the 2,600 Janesville workers and a member of United Auto Workers Local 95 who will be out of a job.
Our only hope is that we still may have a chance to try to get a different product, a future product, but it's probably a slim chance. But we're committed to do our best to sit down with the company, get a local agreement that's going to put us out front, and hopefully we'll stand a chance if the economy starts to pick up.
GM's chief executive Rick Wagner says that's not likely.
We really would not foresee the likely prospect of new plants or new products in the plants that we're announcing today that we'll cease production in.
That's not stopping U.S. Representative Paul Ryan and Senators Russ Feingold and Herb Kohl, who just sent a letter to GM asking for another production line for Janesville. We're going to talk more about the decision and the job loss and what our state and federal officials might be able to do to help Janesville and the GM workers. And we will welcome your thoughts and questions, too, at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. As we talk with Frank Emspach, Emeritus Professor at the University of Wisconsin Extension School for Workers, he is executive producer of WIN, the Workers' Independent News, a headline news service with daily radio and email articles. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you out there?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good.
So what was your reaction, Professor Emspach, to this news on Tuesday that GM will be shutting down Janesville?
Well, I think like everybody else, it was very disturbing and saddened in a way because it marks the end of automobile assembly in Wisconsin, long history of this, and but in a certain sense, sort of predictable, although I think when the market was tanking starting in September, GM could have been a little bit more out front with the UAW when they were negotiating new contracts. But I think that it was also predictable in this sense. The company invested heavily in SUV and large, you know, vehicle production at a time when the gas prices began to increase, and then really did not use that money to restructure itself in what is clearly a predictable change in the market. GM, in other words, there's no vision here. And I think, therefore, all of the large truck plants in the country and were sort of, sort of iffy status.
Yeah.
But it was terrible. GM, you know, the Janesville people, the workers down there in the union, have basically made local agreements in the past. They voted for the contract, and they did these things in the expectation that if they put up, you know, played their end of the bargain, that the company would also reciprocate, and that didn't happen, and I think that's a real tragedy here.
Yeah. So why is it doubtful that GM could shift some other production line to Janesville and forget about the SUVs, but some fuel-efficient model?
Well, it's because they don't want to do it. They're under no obligation to do so, you know, legally, and so they've decided that they're not going to do it, and they haven't given any reason other than they said it's extremely doubtful. But, you know, there's a problem that the company has of overcapacity within its own production system because they've lost market share. If you think about it, let's say 1965 or something like that, 30 or 40 years ago, General Motors alone had something like 60% of the American car market. Now, General Motors' percentage of the market's around 20%. It's a bigger market, but even so, it's a huge loss of business. And so that internally to the company, they have overcapacity. And so that even if I close these plants and produce newer and smaller cars elsewhere, they'll fill their market needs probably. So they, I'm sure from their point of view, from GM's point of view, they say, well, you know, we've got enough. They want to have capacity so that you can produce and run these plants two and three shifts, and their market share no longer justifies it. This is aside from the issues of should they 4 or 5 years ago done what their rivals did, which is begin to think ahead and recognize that oil prices might go up and that they should begin to design something new. But 4 or 5 years ago, you say you do the design and you work it all out, and then you begin to figure out how to add production to older plants. But on the drop of a dime, unless it's a war like we did in World War II, where automobile production stopped, commercial production stopped, you know, basically in January of 1942, when those plants were making other things 6 months later, in the absence of that kind of thing, it's usually a 3 or 4 year cycle before you put something new in a plant.
So, at no fault of their own, some 2,600 workers will be out of a job.
That's correct, except it's worse than that. The GM plant there, first of all, the wages that are paid there really support the local economy in all kinds of different ways. But then the factory itself uses services and goods from a whole variety of producers in Wisconsin, including skilled workers to maintain the place and people that are hired to do repairs and so on. So the impact is much, much greater than the job loss of 2,600 people, and really is a real challenge, I think, here in the state. I would go back a little bit further, though, when we look at this. You know, it's hard to sort of conceive of this now in 2008, but you had Walter Reuther, who was a legendary head of the UAW, United Automobile Workers, after World War II, calling for a balanced transportation system. He was calling for trains and mass transit and buses. Of course, he wanted the buses built by GM, mm-hmm. and he wanted some of the trains built by GM. But we don't have that anymore. And so if we're talking about a future here in Wisconsin for manufacturing industry, I think we should really see if there's a way to challenge the firm to make the kind of investments in that factory, keeping that skilled and dedicated workforce, not just to build a different car, but perhaps to work with state and federal government to put in the kind of products we're going to need in this country in the future.
Yeah, you'd agree with a caller we had in our last half hour who said exactly that. Why doesn't that plant start making buses or trains or something along those lines?
Well, there's clearly a huge demand for the buses. That's probably easier to put into that plant than, you know, a railroad manufacturer in a relatively short period of time. And GM, of course, has a bus division. So every single mass transit agency in the country is now clamoring for equipment, except, of course, they're broke because we're spending the money elsewhere on the war or whatever. But still, there is a demand, an identifiable demand out there for products like that. And perhaps with political pressure and mobilization, it might be possible to get that kind of product in there. I mean, I obviously don't have any inside information about mm-hmm. General Motors thinking, but it's that kind of direction that we need to take in Wisconsin, because all of our industries are being challenged, just like in paper where we're losing jobs.
Yeah.
There are things to do to move the economy in a way that has high-paying, decent jobs, family-supporting jobs, but that are sustainable.
Yeah.
And trying to build an economy on hoping that gas prices are going to drop for a car that's very inefficient is not a sustainable future.
Right. But barring something like that happening, having a different production in that plant, what's the short-term outlook for these 2,600 people who were, they were making some good money?
Yes, that's right. The outlook is poor. There is within the UAW-GM contract, there's various means to cushion the blow, not end it. There are various types of unemployment assistance. There is some wage and income protection for a short period of time and things like that. I don't know how many of the people in that plant are close to retirement and hence would be able to retire with a reasonable, you know, sort of cushion. Basically, what the retirement would do, I suspect, is allow you to have enough income so you could get a job paying a lot less than you had before and still be able to maintain some kind of lifestyle. But basically, the outlook is poor, to be honest with everybody, and I think everybody in the facility knows it. And I think that we're talking about a substantial loss in the economic vitality of Janesville and the surrounding area in Rock County, and that's a real tragedy here.
Frank M. Spack, our guest, emeritus professor at the UW Extension School for Workers. He is also executive producer of WIN, the Workers' Independent News. We welcome your thoughts, your reactions, your questions about GM's announcement this week that it is closing down four plants, including the GM plant in Janesville, putting 2,600 workers out of a job. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Is there something you think could be done by our state and federal officials about this situation? Do you blame GM for lack of vision? We welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 12 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Thursday, June the 5th. We'll talk politics coming up after 7 o'clock. The news is that on Saturday, Hillary Clinton will officially suspend her campaign. and throw her support to Barack Obama. We'll talk about that and more coming up after 7 o'clock. Right now, we're talking about GM closing its Janesville plant by 2010 due to low demand for SUVs and trucks that are manufactured there. We're getting the reaction of Frank Emspach to the news and talking about how the community and the workers are going to be coping in light of this news, and welcoming your thoughts and questions for him. Frank Emspach is emeritus professor at the UW Extension School for Workers. I see in the news, Professor Emspach, that in Canada, the union there is protesting this, you know, forming a blockade and closing down the office in Ontario, saying that this, I think they're saying it violates a labor agreement. You don't expect that to happen in Janesville?
Well, I of course, no, I don't. But the difference is that the Canadian automobile workers believe that they had an agreement from the firm about keeping several of the plants open in Ontario past 2010. And that when this announcement came out, the local leadership there felt that the GM had violated that agreement and immediately sent people over to the office there, the I guess it's a regional office, and basically surrounded it and has asked the company to meet. The company is going to meet, I think, with workers tomorrow in Detroit. The provincial government in Ontario is upset, and they've made that clear. And so there has been that response, but the company is still maintaining that there's nothing that can be done. So we'll see whether that results in anything. I think the anger that people feel certainly is palpable, and I don't know what people are going to do. But I was thinking of something else you'd said earlier in the broadcast. Let me just say that this is not a big surprise, and we're talking about politics. It's political season. Somewhere along the line here, there's got to be some vision about where we're going with our social contract and our safety net and what we're doing in this country. 20 years ago, I was doing economic development work in Massachusetts when they closed the Framingham General Motors plant and this huge shipyard in Quincy, in Massachusetts. Thousands of jobs, high paid, same story. And at that time, the governor, Dukakis, and Secretary Lieutenant Governor Evelyn Murphy got together and said, you know, we need an industrial policy in this state. We need to figure out what we're going to do long term, and set up a whole series of organizations, one of which I led, to try to figure out how to bring about different types of industrial development and innovation, because the thing can't be fixed immediately just by, you know, making some decision. These are long-term changes, and maybe we need that kind of vision in Wisconsin. And it would certainly be nice to hear that vision from the candidates, because ultimately we're going to have to produce things that work in an environment where it's more costly. And that's what will save that plant and save these jobs. Yeah. I don't think there's a quick fix here, unfortunately.
Yeah. Also in the news this morning is that the state of Wisconsin gave GM grants totaling $10 million in 2004 to modernize the Janesville plant.
That's
and
correct.
To presumably keep jobs there. Now the state is looking into trying to get that money back.
That's right. That's happened elsewhere, too. The state of Minnesota gave money to a firm to modernize, and the firm moved out, and the state went after that firm. It's called clawback, actually, a technique to try to get some of the cash back, because it's not fair if you give somebody a subsidy and they use it, and then the taxpayer is basically not only left with the bill, but now left with a huge problem. So there is a sense of equity here, a sense of unfairness. But in terms of a quick fix, the problem that we have is that there's probably not a quick fix. But I do think that we as citizens in the state of Wisconsin can really make the case with General Motors that let's get serious here about the long-term needs of the American economy and the needs of mass transit in Wisconsin elsewhere, and move in the direction that I guess other people have said also, to aggressively seek another product in that plant that will actually meet the needs of the country. Yeah. General Motors is a huge organization. They're not going bankrupt here. They're manufacturing in China. They're manufacturing elsewhere. They've learned how to make cars for those markets. It seems to me that General Motors ought to be able to make something for this market, for the American market.
Let's take some calls. Dawn in Elkhorn is with us. Hi, Dawn. You're on the air.
Hi. I've never spoken on the air before, but I've been listening to this all morning. I've been reading it in the news. And I just wanted to say, well, it is an awful thing to have 2,800 people out of work. I am one of the Motorola people from 5 years ago, 3,800 who lost their job because our jobs went overseas. We at Motorola were making the high-end phone. Nokia was making the everyday consumer phone. Who won out? Nokia. And I lost my job because of no vision. For GM workers to not, at their $28 whatever an hour wages, to not have seen this coming in the last few years, that's all we've seen in the newspaper is GM this, General Motors this. I'm just a little, I volunteer with several organizations in Janesville that deal with the homeless. And I don't understand, you know, we're dealing with people working $7.50 an hour jobs, obviously unable to make ends meet in our dire economy right now. I find it hard to feel sorry for a bunch of workers who should have. Why they didn't see it coming, I have no idea. Yeah. But it's been happening over and over again in America. Manufacturing is not staying.
Yeah. So the GM workers should have seen this coming, according to Dawn, Professor Emsbach.
Well, I think a lot of workers did see it coming. The question is, what are you going to do about it? I don't think anybody in General Motors, after the last round of contracts and concessions, was unclear that the company was in trouble. But the company makes the decisions about where they're going to put products and what they're going to invest in. Now, maybe you could argue that the union and the workers should have been more militant and much clearer and more demanding of the company in terms of long-term guarantees and product investment. I think that the problem that we have is that we need $28 jobs, and that in order to have the kind of lifestyle and go to college and do things that people want to be able to do. So I don't think wages are the problem. As a matter of fact, wages are the least components of any manufacturing operation, at least the costly, the least lowest percentage. So wages don't generally drive these decisions, and they didn't drive it here. But I do think workers knew what was happening. But the question is, what leverage do you have? Company says make arrangements to be more efficient. Everybody says, okay, and they do that. And, well, it doesn't make any difference. So, I mean, the problem is what rights and what? How do we direct investment? And how can workers or people in the community insist that a company maintain their operations there and produce?
Yeah. Next, we go to Bonnie in Stoughton. Hi, Bonnie.
Good morning. I feel really bad for all those Janesville families. My son-in-law actually works there, and I know lots of people at GM because we used to live in Milton. And right down the road, the same thing happened in Edgerton when my husband worked there. Dana made four-wheel drives, and in the late 70s, when the gas prices went through the roof and everybody was laying off and we all lost our jobs, 1,600 of them, and 10 years later, we were still not making the money we made when that company went out. And GM's right down the road, and this is like not that long ago. They should have known better. They know when those gas prices are going out of the roof, and the SUVs take so much money to run them, and the trucks are just bigger and bigger, and there's no reason for them to get better gas mileage. And now these poor people, 2,600 families, and the benefits and the money, they got house payments. I feel really bad for these people. I've been through it, and it really sucks. Yeah. That company should have done something better for those people.
Yeah, Professor Emsbach.
Well, that's the whole issue, right? The company was aware. They have planning departments. And again, everybody who was conscious, you know, knew that there's going to be gas problems and oil shortages. Demand goes up. Supply is more or less constant. Clearly, building a product that requires huge amounts of fuel at a time when we're moving towards more and more fuel efficiency doesn't make sense. And eventually, it got to the point where people said, right, I can't afford this. The whole point of having a large corporation with capacity to plan is that they should plan for the future, not just do what they did in the past. And I think if any criticism can be laid here or pointed at somebody, it's the lack of foresight on the part of the company. Mm-hmm. And again, to meet the needs of our economy. People talked about mass transit, buses, this and that. These are real things. Yeah. You see in the paper today, every newspaper, in fact, in the United States, in the last 3 or 4 days, has had articles saying their mass transit systems are at overcapacity. They can't function. They need more buses and so on and so forth. So there's a need for product produced here.
Yeah.
And I think it's the company's responsibility to meet those needs.
Yeah, we have less than a minute, Professor Emspach, but we've heard that Kenosha recovered from the Chrysler plant closing back in the 80s. Are you hopeful that Janesville will rebound?
Well, certainly we hope that it rebounds, but take a look at Kenosha. The engine plant is still there, and Kenosha, I would say, recovered, and yeah, it's still in existence. The city is still there, but, you know, it's not like it's a bustling manufacturing operation anymore over there. I think we need a balanced economy with manufacturing and the things that go on around Madison with high-end scientific stuff. But you need to do that to create wealth. Manufacturing creates wealth.
We need to leave
it
there.
In our country, we need to look at that.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Frank Emspach, Emeritus Professor at the University of Wisconsin Extension School for Workers. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Ideas Network.